Thank you, Kate. So my name is Michael Chalmers, and I'm the Regional Program Manager for Asia and the Middle East. If you take a moment and look at the photo, you'll notice that there's six people, but only five faces. The torso covered in the blue polo, that's me. That was taken by one of our partners, and we just asked them to take a photo. They took it, gave it back, thinking it was a good photo, and my head was chopped off. So I'll save you a quick question. I'm 6'6 and 5'8". And so and although I might not be Filipino in my stature, I have connections to the Philippines that go back generations. And so my grandfather was in Leyte Gulf in World War II, and then he wanted to come back and help the people of the Philippines. And so he got an education in the U.S., went back to the U.S., or went back to the Philippines with my grandma, and spent 50 years as missionaries there. So my dad was born there, grew up there. I have a bunch of family there. I spent a couple school years there as a child, and I love going there. So, quick introduction. With that, I'll share a little bit of the scope of the presentation. So I'm going to give an introduction, then go over history of the allocation process, which we're revisiting this past year. We have been revisiting. And then we'll talk about some the different frameworks that we've used in order to make those improvements. Then I'll show you a value stream map, which you may not know what that is, but I'll get to it in just a minute. And then we'll go over the updates that are super important to you. And so with that, you've heard from several people, from Matt, from Mark, several people in our organization, that we are growing and we are having our biggest year yet, but we're not having the exponential rate of growth that we once had. It, instead of being like this, it's more like this. And so we're still being blessed as an organization. We're still the biggest we've ever been as far as that goes. But we're not focusing on like expanding to a new zip code. And without the resources going into that, we have been given the opportunity to revisit some of our current processes so that we can ensure that we're the best stewards of the resources God has given us, and so that we can continue to feed more kids throughout this. And so with that, I'll jump into the history of the allocation process. It started out in 2009. Prior to that, we oftentimes would complete a container and have to reach out to partners and ask if you needed that volume after it was done. And so instead of doing it that way, we decided to set up a process where you told us what the demand was, and then we were able to commit to that. We could grow with you through that process. But a lot has changed from 2009 to 2019, 2020, when we were revisiting this. And so back in 2009, there were four FMSC sites, three in Minnesota, one in Illinois. And now, fast forward, we are at eight, three in Minnesota, three in Chicagoland, Arizona, Texas, and then we have distribution centers from mobile pack events, like warehouses that those events are staged out of, in Georgia and Pennsylvania. So many things have changed. Back in 2009, in the calendar year of 2009, we packed over 74 million meals, which is awesome. But in the calendar year of 2019, we've packed almost a million meals a day. So over 364 million meals. So lots of change in that time. Also, as a kind of a fun reference, in 2009, the BlackBerry Tour was released. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that had a full QWERTY keyboard, the like ball on it, and latest and greatest technology. But fast forward to 10 years later, and we have the iPhone 11 Max with like three cameras and But that just shows you how much has changed in that time frame. And so I'm going to talk about some pretty nerdy business concepts in a little bit. And I want you to keep something in mind throughout that whole process. And that's that the concepts I'll talk about are applicable in the business world the exact same that they are in the nonprofit world. So in a business setting, the fundamental accounting equation is revenue minus cost equals profit. And firms try to maximize shareholder value. But in the nonprofit world, we, like in Feed My Starving Children's case, we have donations minus expenses, and that equals kids being fed. And so there are, if we're able to address some of those costs, some of those expenses, and reduce those, then we're able to have a greater and greater impact. And maybe you're at a different nonprofit space where you run an orphanage, and maybe that cost savings can allow you to expand that orphanage. Or maybe you have a school, and you're able to add a classroom at that school because you have some cost savings. And so whether it's that or feeding more kids, I just want to let you know that those concepts can be applicable in all those different circumstances. And so you might be like, why is he so into business? So my background is, I triple majored in business when I was in college, including supply chain management. And I worked in operations and logistics for a few years, and then transitioned to a position in operations at a startup that failed. I ended up going back to school, getting an MBA, and then while I was working part-time in the mobile pack group, which is where I was before I moved into the international programs group. So that's a lot of my background, but I just wanted to let you know that I kind of nerd out about some of this stuff. So I know it's late in the afternoon, some of you might be tired. I'll try to be animated and explain things thoroughly. Also, I was even like president of the supply chain management club, so that really shows you where I'm coming from. Thank you. And so, for those of you that may not be as familiar, supply chain management is a field of study that involves all of the operations and logistics from raw materials to finished goods. So if you go in Target, Walmart, whatever it is, and you see a product on the shelf, let's say a spatula or something like that, that came from a warehouse and was in transit between those two locations. It was sent by rail across the country, shipped on an ocean freight, potentially from another country, was produced in that country, raw materials were extracted. In this example, this is a real example actually. Let's say the spatula was made in China, and then the raw materials were brought out of the ground there, and then processed into a usable way. All of those steps, all those operations and logistics are part of that product supply chain. And so I mentioned that example, which seems obscure, but I actually did a course in school that we got to follow Target supply chain from their store and distribution center in Iowa. Went to Iowa State. Go Cyclones. We're not doing so hot in sports this year, but still love the team. And so I was able to follow it all the way back to China and see the suppliers over there. So that's supply chain management. Within the field, there's several different elements of it, but I'm going to focus on lean and lean methodology, lean manufacturing, lean thinking, and that's a framework that was kind of made famous by Toyota Production System and how they improved the quality and everything of their products and reduced defects in many different ways. And so I'll highlight some elements of that. I know my coworkers heard some of this. I gave a presentation of them in this summer, and I was able to nerd out then too, so that was awesome. The first thing that I want to highlight is continuous improvement. And so that's the idea that if you see an issue, you can pause where you're at, take a step back, and improve that situation so that you become more efficient. And then you continue doing that over time, continue bettering your processes, and over time your efficiency per day increases and increases and increases, and that allows you to do what you want to do better. And so another concept of that is another concept of lean methodology is that value is defined by the customer's perspective. So in our instance, at FMSC, if let's say a child was paying for the food that they were receiving, we would only want to do processes that the customer would be willing to pay for. So they don't want to pay for storage costs. They wouldn't want to pay for unnecessary rework, anything like that. And so we always want to focus on the customer and what's best for them. And so I highlighted on the site several different types of waste. I mentioned transportation, waiting time, if there's defects, overproduction, unnecessary transportation, any space that you're maybe leasing out but you're not able to be able to fully utilize, that could be a potential waste. And then I want to focus on inventory a little bit. There are pros and cons of holding inventory. And pros, you can continue, let's say, production in a system regardless of whether there's a defect. And so that's great, but then it also hides that defect so that you don't necessarily understand that continuous improvement portion of it. And also, if you have money in inventory, it's not being reinvested in some of your core programs. And so that money is tied up in the item rather than in cash. And so that's another con of inventory. And kudos to FMSC this year because we were able to throttle production. And you probably know based off conversations with your RPM about how we were able to change demand together and understand when our partners need product so we weren't holding unnecessary inventory and storage. And so thank you so much for all your help in that process. And then another aspect of lean manufacturing is value stream mapping. And so that's any set of processes that create value, that would be a value stream. And so a value stream map is a visual representation of that. And so I'll go into that a little bit more in just a second, but I wanted to express that there are different things that have to be improved if we want to execute some of these things, like different communication and points like that. We'll talk about it in just a moment. And so if you give your attention to the screen that on the whiteboard, the top left photo right there, you might be able to make out a whole bunch of boxes, and on those boxes, there's names of different processes, and we map out the time that it takes and the people that it takes, and all of those processes make up the steps that are a part of our allocation and fulfillment process. And so, late this summer, I was able to kind of facilitate that with our team. But one thing I wanted to mention as far as that goes, I didn't know anything about our allocation process. I had like a 20-minute intro conversation when I started. And one fundamental idea of lean methodology is that the people on the ground, the people that are actually doing it, that know it the best, they're the ones that you use their ideas because they're the experts in their field. And so it's very much like empower those people so that the process can be improved in that way. And so at the bottom, it's really hard to see, but there's a more formal, more industry standard way of representing the value stream map, and it shows all the arrows, the inventory, the waiting times in between. I'll briefly ask you to give your attention to the very bottom. There's a time ladder, and it shows what time is value added in the eyes of the customer, and then what is more waste. And so, or non-value added activities is the terminology that we use. But all that to say, we spend a lot of time on the allocation process and the monthly requisition and fulfillment process. And so every month, we spend over 277 hours on that in international programs. And then on a yearly basis, when we're working on our allocations, we spend 368 total hours of FMSC time on making sure that we can do that well. And so now, now we're finally getting to the update. So that was a long, nerdy intro. Thanks for being with me. And so, from your perspective, there's going to be updates in communication and then processes. And the reason why I mentioned communication is there's this thing called the bullwhip effect in supply chains that can occur if, let's say, a hardware store that's selling hammers has someone doing a construction project and demand doubles 1 month. And they reach out to their warehouse that supplies them and says, demand doubled. And then the warehouse is like, oh no, demand doubled this month. What do we have to do next month? And they go to the manufacturer and they're like, we need four times as much. Like, we don't know what demand's gonna be in the future. We wanna be ready. And then they go to the lumber company or the metalwork facility and ask for even more and more. And so across the entire supply chain, there's a tremendous amount of inventory. And so increasing communication alleviates that. If everyone knows that it's a one-time blip, everyone can plan for that and move forward, and it's not a big deal. And so with that, I'll jump into the first major update, and that is that the allocation request is gonna move from January 2021 to fall of 2020. You might be wondering why that is. One major reason is that we have our budgeting meetings, our executive teams talking about budgeting for the next year, and if we wanna have an accurate goal of what that should be, we need to understand what demand we have from our partners so that we can plan to meet that demand, rather than kind of guessing what demand is and basing our productions off that. Also, it improves production planning, and we can hold less inventory year over year because we can plan earlier. And so it also standardizes our requisition process, because right now, we don't give our partners enough time to follow our standard process for March applications. And this would allow it to be standard whole year round. And also the RPMs reach out to a lot of our partners this fall and realize that that you all were able to provide really solid ideas around how many containers you need in the year ahead based on that timeline of October. And so there's more to come, but I'll jump into the next update, which is that the monthly requisition timing is moving from the 15th of the previous month to the 1st. And then the loading details, instead of being sent by the 20th, will be sent by the 10th of the previous month. So I'll give you an example so that it's easier to understand. But if you have a December allocation, current state, you requisition it on the 15th of November, and then we send the loading details by the 20th. In the next fiscal year, if you have an allocation in December, we'll ask that you send the requisition by the 1st of the month of November, and then we'll send you by the 10th of November all the loading details. And part of that is because shipping to certain countries, it takes extra time to get certain permits and stuff like that. And also, we've received some feedback from partners that, like, please don't put this in the first week of the month because we need more time to plan it. And so it gives us all more flexibility as far as that goes. also improves our forecasting accuracy because we know more going into, let's say, our unallocated conversations. We're like, hey, how much more do we have in order to give our partners more? We can do that earlier on in the month with more certainty and then better serve you through that process. And then, now that I finished the communication-based changes, I'm gonna invite Hillary to come up here, and she's gonna talk about some of the different process changes. And I just wanna say thank you so much for bearing with me and my nerdiness. I'm so thankful to be here at my very first partner conference. So you guys are awesome, thanks.
All right, I want everybody to stand up really quick. Stand up. I need to see everybody standing. So I have a mic, I can see that. I'll call you out. Okay.
This guy.
Brian, go ahead and stand. Thank you for setting an example.
To.
All right. You may sit down. So you probably wonder why the DIP or the International Programs or staff of FMSC sit in the back, and we actually watch you all on your computers and your phones. We've watched a couple of you nod off today, so I just wanted to see if you guys could stand up, wake up a little bit. And I did that because I'm the last presentation, and that's always not a super fun time to present because y'all are tired and have been sitting all day. So. My name is Hillary Autry. I'm an international programs manager. I honestly forget my title a lot. I've been with FMSC for about 12 years now and had the pleasure of working with this organization and specifically with you guys and our partnerships for the last about 10 years or so. I am not a nerd, so I will not be geeking out on this. My presentation is cool. So you will be lying awake, but I will say that we actually call Michael the Jolly Giant in the office because he could not hurt a fly. So I will buy someone a cup of coffee, not the coffee out there, but a different coffee if you can make him crabby or angry while you're here. If you can do that, then I will certainly buy you guys a coffee.
Yes.
So
a terrible challenge.
So yes, he was talking a little bit about our process and procedure changes. I'm the lucky one, and I get to come up and have a little bit of we call it a velvet sledgehammer, which is pretty much saying kind of more policy procedural changes for us, but in a loving way because we love you all and want the best for you. First of all, a couple updates. We are revising your PPA. How many of you guys know what a partner performance assessment is? Okay, so you all are gathering yours. This is the last you will see of this format and this version. Next year, we are simplifying it. So it's going to be way more objective, way shorter. That's filled out by your regional program managers. It's a lot more straightforward. We're basically just focusing on the shipping portion. Did you come for it? Did you come for it on time? Did you communicate with us when there were delays? That type of thing. And this all ties into that process and procedure that we were talking about with the value stream mapping earlier. It will have end of use 1.0 on there because it's $65,000 worth of gift in kind on one of those containers. So we just want to know that you got the container, please. But we are changing our end of use 2.0, and I'm going to talk about that here in a minute. So again, 2019, you're in the old version, 2020 coming up, you will receive electronically your PPA in the new version. There will be a bulletin. When we say bulletin, it's just basically a mass communication to our distribution partner network of these changes. So just when you see the word bulletin, just make sure you read it because that's really crucial information from us. Couple things that we also did change on the end of use 1.0. We basically live by the motto in our department is don't ask for data that you're not going to use, or maybe if you need to ask for data in a different roundabout way, we want to capitalize on that. So we are removing the certain fields of the date of arrival at the final destination. We don't use that information. We're not going to make you track it. We're also removing the TDMC, which is total delivered meal cost, but we're gonna ask for that in a different way, specifically to level five partners. We know who you are in this room, but we're gonna ask for those numbers from you in a different way. Fields that are not changing, we still need to hear from you, whether you received it or not within 90 days, or ask for an extension if you run into hiccups, which we understand is possible. And then we are watching these reports way more closely than any other year I've been with this department. So we have one staff member, Lindsay, brings all those in, tracks them in our system. She actually sends a monthly report to the regional program managers, and they will actually follow up with you saying, hey, where's this container? We need to know that it got there. The reason we say that is because we're giving that stat to our volunteers and our donors that we hear that this food reaches these destinations. So we have that reputation to stand up for that and to say it confidently and proudly to our volunteers and donors. If you have more questions on that, you can certainly talk to your regional program manager. And they are still due per shipment, obviously. How many of you are excited about this news?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. We are no longer going to require end of use 2.0, but that does not mean that we don't need to hear about anything of the impact of the food or stories or photos from you in the field and your offices. The reason why we are getting rid of the 2.0 is, first of all, it just, the last 10 years that I've worked within the department, it's kind of been a push for you guys. Like, we've had to push for stories. How many of you have felt that from us? Come on, give us more stories, give us more photos. We need to hear the impact because we need to be able to generate more donations to show the impact of this food. So rather than doing something that's not really working for us or it's not valuable to you guys, we want to just start from ground zero and build up from there. So what we're doing is we're actually going to talk with you guys first, take this next month or so, and think about what that looks like, what's feasible, what's not, what are some of your greatest challenges in getting stories from the field, what's working really well for you, and then we're gonna bring it back to our team. We're working really closely with Andy and his team in development and marketing because the DIP uses it truly for more inspiration for us and just to see you guys working in the field. But ultimately, those stories turn into our marketing development naturally for them to share with their volunteers and donors. And so they are gonna work with us on what that will look like as well. So again, a DIP bulletin that's gonna be coming out to explain those changes. Once we collectively get all those feedback from you guys of what's working and what's not, we're gonna take that back to the office, talk about what the next steps are for feedback reporting and impact stories, photos, that kind of thing, and then roll it out to you guys. If you have not already, per organization, Marin and Katie are still in the exhibitor room. I've actually touched base with them and they said they've received phenomenal feedback from you guys on what's working and what's not. If you have not talked to them, please make sure that you stop by and chat with them about what works for your organization. Again, we still need you. It's not like it's completely going away. We don't want to hear from you again on the impact of the food. It's just the requirements are, the quantity and quality is pretty much kind of going away in the fact that we're not going to hold you per level of partnership. So I said it, we need your input. We want to inform, inspire, educate, and activate our volunteers and donors. That's the language that we use with our development and our marketing team specifically. And we will share that with you hopefully by March 1st. Nice. How many of you are familiar with this? Anybody heard of it yet in the conference? Okay. Okay, so the partner programming profile, this is gonna be a new requirement for every organization in this room that wants to receive an allocation. So it's basically our way of finding out from you, okay, so you wanna receive food from us and partner with us, but how are you going to utilize that food? It will actually survey or profile your top five countries. So if you work in one country, you fill it out for just that one country. If you work in 17 different countries with our food, you fill it out up to the top five countries that you work with. It is a lengthy survey, and I'm just gonna give you a heads up on that. And the reason that we're doing this is, again, so that we can kind of go to that grab bag, that data profile, talk to our marketing and our development team to say, hey, we've got 85 schools that are utilizing our food in Nicaragua. Or, hey, we're actually serving X amount of refugees in South Sudan with this organization. So it's basically sharing your information of how you're using our food in the field with our donors, our volunteers, and internally, so that we can tell your story. Again, it's one survey per organization. It is required to receive your allocation. So I just need to repeat that just so that you guys know. It's gonna be due at the end of February 28th, because the March 1st is the beginning of our fiscal year. It takes about, we average, it's probably gonna take about an hour to complete. So make sure that you put that on your books for your staff. If it's you or somebody else, let us know. Okay. Okay.
So you don't want allocation next
year? Here's a fun one. Just a fun fact for you all. Just this last year, 2019, we actually had, when we talk about 3PLs, the third-party logistics warehouses, we pay extra storage to store our finished products like Manipak rice, Manipak potato D, potato W, because it goes back to that process and procedure change that Michael was talking about, that we're trying to match up productions with allocations and when this product goes out our doors. So when we look back and we reflect on 2019, at one point in time, we had over 55 containers sitting in 3PLs. So it's over $60,000 worth of storage for us. Last year, I think I actually put it in here. Yeah. 2 years ago, two fiscal years ago about, because we're almost ending one, we were in the six-digit figures for what we were paying in 3PL costs or extra storage costs. It cost us $1,100 per container to store it into a third-party logistics warehouse. So we're trying to bring that cost down so we can make more meals to provide for you guys. To store a container is about 4,500 meals to us. It is not a decision that we take lightly. So I manage our logistics specialist, as well as another staff member in our supply chain that manages these outbound shipments, Sam and Ruthie. Many of you probably have heard their name before. You guys, trust me, if something is stalled or delayed, we're happy to work with you, but it's at least $1,100 charge to us. So it's not a decision that we just move it over here, move it to this warehouse. That's money in our pockets. Like Mark was saying, we want to be good stewards with the money and the donations that we are given. And so we're just trying to be better at that. And so one of those things we're going to have to start doing is implementing a shipping policy with our partners. So here's the policy. You all are so quiet. This is such a fun presentation. Okay. This is the new shipping policy. Effective March 1st, 2020. Your booking confirmations and domestic confirmations are now due 3 business days before your actual load date. Before it was 48 hours in advance, we are now asking for 72 or three business days. I want you guys to know that we did our research on this with the industry asking if this is achievable, and all of them without a doubt said yes. You would have a booking number or at least an idea if you're going to be moving this domestically within 3 days. The reason for that is basically so that if Ruthie and Sam have to move it to a 3PL or they have to call the warehouse and say they can't come all of a sudden, which we will work with you and we'll figure that out, then they can react a little bit more in confidence rather than kind of hustling around a little bit. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. When you send your booking number or a domestic pickup, so if you're sending an ocean freight container or you're sending a 53-foot trailer that's going to go 2 miles down the road to your own storage warehouse that you are paying for, we are going to require and ask
and nudge you for the trucking company name and the phone number. The reason for that is that my logistics team sometimes gets to the day of the load. They can't reach you, they can't reach the freight forwarder, and they have no idea who the trucker is. And so then they go to the warehouse, and the warehouse says, I'm full. I have to have this out today. And then we say, well, move it over to a 3PL, and then that's another $1,100. So this is just so that we can be proactive ourselves on the day of the load to say, hey, we know who the trucking company is. We'll call them. I know that so-and-so is in Cambodia, can't reach them, don't know who the freight forwarder is, whatever the case may be. We're kind of taking ownership a little bit to say, now I can actually take matters into my own hands and call a trucking company and get a real-time update. Dock appointment is not changing. It's still 24 hours in advance. We did some studies on this a little bit. 24 hours is pretty typical for dispatch, so we're keeping that. Please make sure that you prioritize your original load date and time. So as Michael was saying, you're going to requisition the first of the month prior to the month that you're going to be shipping. So if you have a December shipment, you're requisitioning November 1st, okay? When we send you that date, that's just where we've placed you. Obviously, if you come back and say, hey, can we delay this by a week? Hey, can we push it up by a week? Hey, can we push it out by a day? We will do everything possible in our power to work with you in that. But just understand that we are shifting and moving 10 different warehouses and up to 1,400 finished product containers a year. So we're trying our best to get these things out on time. Try the best that you can to prioritize that load date. You guys are the paying partners. This is what I tell our staff all the time. We don't have the ammo or the... we don't really have the demand to call a freight forwarder and say, no, you need to be here this week, because we're not paying for that to be loaded and gone. You guys are. So if you guys can work with us to try to prioritize, that would be great. Here's another, the next big update. Here's a new policy. We are actually going to give you a four-week allowance to come and pick up your original donation from the load date that we originally gave you. So think about this. If you are allocated something in December and we give you a December 1st load date, you have 4 weeks, or to the end of December, essentially, because it's a month, to get that out. But we, again, would still like, where's a little zapper thingy? We still want you to prioritize the load date. So, funny enough, this does not mean, you guys, I'm saying this in love, okay? This does not mean that if I give you a December 1st date, you're like, meh. I've got all of December to get it out, Hill, come on, like, drag my feet, I won't start booking this. No, we still want you to try to get that out because it's still a delay, it's still a process for us. But it is our guarantee from us to you that we will hold that for 4 weeks. When 4 weeks starts to kind of come up, it's between Sam and our logistics team and your regional program manager to say, we're going to have to release this. Or we understand, sometimes there's going to be cases where we're going to say, gosh, this partner is going to X country and it has been a bear. Let's hold it for them because we know that it's been difficult. We understand that. We are grace-filled people. But we are having to implement this four-week allowance specifically just so that we can lower our 3PL costs. Is everybody understanding? Is everybody not like me by the end of the conference? Okay. It also allows those people, so if you have a December 31st load, you would then still have another 4 weeks allowance, just like the person that had a load December 1st. Okay? And then this is the biggest thing. Communication, communication, communication. If you come to us the day of your load and we're like, hey, and we finally get a hold of you, and you're like, oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. I've been meaning to get to you. We'll work with you, but if you haven't been communicating, it's a little difficult. And then we have to make that decision of whether or not we're going to spend that $1,100 to then ship it into a 3PL and then accrue even more costs because it might sit there for weeks on end, okay? So just please communicate with us any changes. And a dip bulletin will be coming with these changes. So I'm going to present to you just really quick, just so you guys know the box and design changes. How many of you guys know that this is coming? Okay. How many of you have seen the new designs out on the table? Okay, so it started with the reformulation of Manipak Rice. We now have new designs for all of our products, bring uniformity. On a survey years ago, back in 2016, a lot of you said you wanted a Ziploc pouch for the D and the W. That now has that. And the production has already started. So we will be sending a bulletin specifically out to highlight the before and after, but you guys get to see them. Ooh. Ah. Ooh. Okay, this one is a little, we never had a pre-printed pouch for Lentil, but now we do, and so we're proud of that. And the global pack is now specifically global, not just partner specific, because we are wanting to expand in different countries. So this is the lineup. We took the people, the volunteers off the box. It just made more sense specifically because of the feedback from you guys and the field of the design. We're not stopping there. We are always trying to be innovative and new, thinking outside the box. We do have a research team at FMSC that's looking at institutionalized bags. So that's serving in schools or community feedings. You know, how many of you have ever been in the field, you'd have to rip open like 300 bags and you're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So we are looking into it. I have no guarantee. I don't have an answer for you. I don't even have a timeline for you. But I just want you to know that we are looking into it and we are researching it for you. All right, everybody, remember, I was asked to put this in my slides. We will have no partner conference in 2021 here in Florida, but we will be having regionalized conferences coming up here this year and into next year, put on by yours truly, your RPMs regionally. Okay, so I'm done with my presentation, and now I have to take your questions. So, Michael, if you can come join me up here, and then if there's another... Yep, we're good on time. That was a lot of information, a lot of changes for you guys. Questions? Am I more nerdy or Michael?
Michael.
Rough crowd. Anybody else? No questions. Okay. I'm going to call up Dave. If you do have questions, totally fine on the sidebar. If you want to talk to your regional program manager about any of these changes coming up or in the next month or so, you can certainly follow up with them. Thank you.